and welcome to A Bit Much. I'm Jenna.
And I'm Megan. And I mean, usually on A Bit Much, every 3 weeks we read a book, watch its movie adaptation, and then talk about it while drinking alcohol. But Jenna, why are we doing something different today?
We're doing something different because it has been almost 2 years since we started this podcast. Because of the nature of the calendar that we generally use in this country and this planet, and because of the fact that we changed our posting schedule from 2 weeks to 3 weeks, we will be releasing this, I think, a week before the 2 year anniversary of us publishing episodes.
And what are we doing? It's different. I know what we're doing. It's different because we're going to talk about, like, we're going to take all of the movie adaptations we've watched so far, and we're just going to narrow it to movies because it's way too difficult to talk about books and movies. Take the movie adaptations we've seen so far and kind of rank the top 10 or yes. so that we believe are the best ones.
Right.
But there will be contention. So there's going to be arguments. Jenna's probably going to like something stuffy that I don't like. I'm probably going to like something ridiculous that Jenna doesn't like. So that's why you're tuning in.
Yes. So this is sort of a review of the past 40-odd episodes that we've done. I think it's 44 episodes that we've done, but don't quote me on that.
It sounds about right.
So in preparation, Megan and I have looked over the movies that we've watched before, and we've each chosen our top 10. And then together we're going to attempt to determine what the top 10 movies that we have watched and talked about on this podcast are. We'll see if we actually manage to agree on a top 10.
I think I'm calling it right now, and I won't say which one I think it is because that would be unclimactic, but anticlimactic is a word for that. Anticlimactic, but I think we're going to choose the same top one. Just calling it right now.
Potential. I have a couple that I know we're both going to agree on being really good, but we'll see. So, Megan, what are you drinking?
Today I am drinking a Kentucky Straight Bourbon whiskey. It's called 1792, and it's very fancy. And I got it. I'm pretty sure it's made an appearance on this podcast before, but I got it from my cousin Nathan for Christmas because he has a hipster friend who like collects very fancy bourbon. So thanks to shout out to Nathan's hipster friend. What about you, Jenna? What are you drinking?
So I feel like pretty trashy in comparison. I am drinking raspberry lemonade with cheap vodka in it.
Oh my gosh. No, that sounds delicious right now. Like, pretty much the only reason I'm drinking whiskey is because I have not had time to go to the store and buy anything else. That's like a classic college drink, too. That's like what we had all the time.
Basically, yeah, like any citrusy drink plus cheap vodka, which I'm always here for.
So. Okay, so how do you want to start this whole rigmarole, my friend?
Do you want to name one first, or do you want me to?
You go ahead.
Okay. My first submission for one of the top 10 movies that we've watched is also the first movie that we ever watched, which is The Princess Bride.
That is the one that I called in my head that we were both. I still think it's going to end up being number one. I also have Princess Bride. Because it's so good.
I think it's a really good candidate. Like, it's a movie that I loved before we did the podcast. It's got drama. It's got such incredible humor. Like, its humor is so pointed at the kind of stuff that I like.
So
many iconic lines.
Yes. And the way I chose my, like, top 10 was, like, what movie kind of took its source material, the book, and, like, elevated it even more, like kind of interpreted it in the best way possible into film, into a visual medium. And I think Princess Bride is just like a masterclass on how to do that. It was just so good.
Yeah, it's so good. That's actually, before we go any further, I think we need to make a decision as to whether we're going to consider their status as an adaptation in when we're thinking about how good a movie is.
I mean, that's pretty much not like the only thing that I thought about, but like my biggest thing that I thought about.
Oh, interesting. Because I kind of did it the other way. Like that was my fallback for.
So you just went best movies in general.
Right. That's what I tried to do.
Interesting.
So we need to make a decision. Are we going to do best movies or best? How highly do we want to like value their skill as an adaptation?
I mean, my whole theory on this thing was, like, our whole podcast is kind of about how books are adapted into movies.
Yeah.
So I think it should be weighed pretty heavily.
Okay, in my humble opinion. So I might have to make some adjustments.
Okay.
Then to my
We can take a pause if you want to.
No, that's okay. Let's just do it as we go.
Okay.
But because I think probably the ones that I chose are still really good examples of that. Okay, so we've got Princess Bride on the list. Now, your turn to present an option.
All right. So, unlike Jenna, I have ranked my top 10. So, Princess Bride is my number one. My number two, Brokeback Mountain.
Okay. I agree with that. Like you said, I didn't rank mine.
Are you sure? Because you don't.
Like I said,
sure.
I haven't ranked mine, but I definitely have Brokeback Mountain on the list. I definitely think it's in our top 10. And I also agree that I would put it below Princess Bride.
Yes. Because, like, so the only reason I would put it below Princess Bride is because, like, I had less of a good time watching it. Because it's sad. It's, like,
yes,
still
I mean,
very good.
Telling very different stories.
Yes.
Like, there's always going to be a level of subjectiveness in our, like, ranking of this because we have sampled far and wide in terms of genre and content.
Yes. But super well done. I think this is almost, I don't know. It's very, very high on my list of elevating the book. Because it was like a very short book. It was like, is it technically a novella? Can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, I would even a novella is kind of long for it. I mean, it was a short story. It
right?
was like a decent length for a short story, but you know, it's published in the New Yorker. It's not like it's a full length novel.
Yeah. So it had like the interesting challenge of instead of taking things away from the source material, it had to add to it. But it still all felt very cohesive and very much in the same tone as the short story. And it fleshed it out more in a very satisfying way, which I thought was really impressive.
Yeah, I agree. And then also, like, the acting was so excellent in that
so
movie.
Good.
And just, like, my memory from it is so strong of, like, you know, because it's a very descriptive story. Like, the writing does such a good job of placing you in that environment. And the movie also did that in terms of, like, cinematography and stuff. It was just very good.
I agree.
Okay, so my next one, although in no particular order, is Pride and Prejudice.
I also have Pride and Prejudice.
Okay.
I bet.
Where do we want to put that?
Well, I think below Brokeback Mountain. It's a very fun film. Do I think it's not very loyal to the source material in tone? Like, basically the same things happen, but they happen in a wildly different way. Like, which I can appreciate because you know me and my qualms with classic literature. And so this was great for me personally because it took, like, you know, I love Jane Austen. It's great, but it's not like I don't pick up Jane Austen to just read on any given day. Mm-hmm. It's mostly for school and for when Jenna tells me to read Jane Austen. And so it's not, you know, not my top favorite, but very good source material brought to a level that I can appreciate because it was way more rom-com-y and there was yelling in the rain and there were men with their shirts half open walking across fields and there was an angry kiss that we talked about at length. And so it was a great ride.
Yeah. Yes, I agree in terms of like adaptation, not as good as the other two we've discussed so far, but still a really enjoyable movie and very well done.
Yeah.
Okay, your turn.
Okay. So my number three is Coraline.
I don't have this one on my list at all.
That shocks me to my core, Alive. Because I thought it just did such a great job of interpreting the world of the book. And the fact that the book was a children's book. And I mean, it's like, I don't know even how to classify the movie. Because it's like, you kind of want to say it's a children's movie because it's like claymation or whatever. But it's like, actually very scary, in my opinion. And just like the way it uses color and imagery, like I just thought it was really well done. And also like Neil Gaiman is a genius.
I mean, Coraline's a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of depicting and elevating its source material, I do think the movie did a really good job. Because it was also, it was in not quite the same situation because like while Coraline is a children's book, it's a children's book of enough like length and substance that you could have adapted it pretty directly and had a full length movie.
Right. It's not like a picture book. It's a chapter book.
Yeah. But I guess I don't know. It's a good movie, but I personally didn't love it as much as the other things that I have on my list.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know how we're gonna like it.
Right? I guess we should have another list for like outliers.
Well, you know what? Here's what we should do. This is a work in progress. let's place all of ours on there.
Okay.
In the order that we think they belong. And then at the end, if we want to have arguments about like, say there's like four or five like outliers where we didn't both have them on our list, then we can argue about, you know, whether we're going to elevate those to the top 10 or whether we're just going to cut those bottom ones off.
Okay. I like it.
Okay. So right now we both agree that this is the bottom one.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to combat that with one that I don't know that you have on your list. Which is the other Neil Gaiman story that we've done, Stardust.
I do not have that on my list. What's your argument for Stardust? Let me hear
it. Okay, here's my argument for Stardust. Stardust is a great story. I think both the book and the movie told a great story. It was a story that I liked better than Coraline, and part of that, I think, is just in the intention, right? It's a story that is more geared towards older readers, right? I mean, it is, like, the book pulled off so well this idea of, like, an adult fiction fairy tale. And the movie, I felt like, did a great job of adapting that story and, yes, cutting down on things so that it would fit in a feature-length film, but still, like, keeping the like general ideas of it, adding its own like cool little quirks to it. We had young and beautiful Charlie Cox as our main character.
Gotta love little apple cheeks Charlie Cox.
Yes, we had like it was a movie that really effectively pulled off having a like complicated or multi-layered plot, right? Because we had like what the witches were doing and trying to get the star, and you know, the main story about Tristan finding the star and bringing her back for his, you know, beloved, but in the process falling in love with her, the star, and then like the brothers who all had to kill each other in order to be next in line for succession, and all of that, like those, like different plots were all given like enough attention.
That is fair. I do agree with that synopsis of it. I think this is just where we're going to run into the fact that you did movie wise and I did elevating the book wise or adapting wise, because like I thought the adaptation was like just okay. It was good. You know, it was definitely not the worst that we've ever seen. That's for damn sure. But it was just like, I didn't think it added anything to the book, is my opinion. And those damn glass flowers that turned into floppy, sad dollar store flowers.
Yes. Okay. Yes. I guess you have a valid point that if we're saying like the deciding factor is the power or effectiveness of the adaptation, you're right that Coraline, okay, here's what I'm gonna say. I feel like Coraline was a better adaptation.
Uh-huh.
But Stardust was a movie that I liked better.
I will agree with you on that point. So we just have to decide which one we're weighing more than the other.
Okay, then let's just push it off. Let's put Stardust on the list. And okay. I will concede to put it below Coraline because we both agree that in terms of adaptation, it was not as impressive as Coraline.
Okay.
Okay, your turn.
Okay, so my number four on the list is The Princess Diaries.
I also have that on my list. I think it's a great movie.
Hey, it is a great movie. I love The Princess Diaries. It just gives me such a warm, fuzzy feeling. I love Anne Hathaway. I love whoever plays her grandma. Who is that actress?
Julie Andrews.
Julie Andrews. Not a national treasure, because she's British, right?
the treasure of another nation.
The treasure of another nation. She's wonderful. I think it's such a good adaptation and elevation. I liked it better than the book, I think. I can't really remember the book.
I know that I like the book better than you do, so.
Oh, interesting, because I've, like, watched the movie so many times, I only read the book once. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why it's so much more prominent in my mind than the book is, but I just think it does such a good job, and it's such a great, like, little teenage movie, and it warms my heart.
Okay, I agree. Do you think, in terms of ranking, you put that below Coraline?
I think I put it above Coraline now, on second thought. Okay.
If I had to place it in our list right now, I would put it above Coraline.
Yeah. Okay, I think we should give it equal weight, right? Adaptation and good movie. And I think The Princess Diaries is both a very good adaptation and a better movie than Coraline. So,
yeah,
I'll give you that.
Okay. Okay, this was one where it's a really good movie, and also in terms of adaptation was incredible, which is Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Hey, you hit my five spot exactly.
Oh, damn.
Yes. Okay, yes. Your turn. Talk about Fantastic Mr. Fox.
So Fantastic Mr. Fox was just a great movie. You know, it was like I've seen a number of Wes Anderson movies, and I like them for various reasons, but I mm-hmm. feel like this one was just such a great example, like, having it in the, like, animal world and toying around with that. I mean, just kind of, like, the inherent humor that they were able to play around with placing this in the animal world and mix, like, you know, in terms of, like, elevating the animal world to be about humans, but then also there would be these moments where they would just, like, revert to their animal nature. So great. The writing was so funny and so quick and witty. It took what was a really basic children's story, which, you know, isn't bad for a children's story, but isn't interesting to read as an adult, you know, took that and made it into just, like, an excellent plot that I really enjoyed, and, like, developed the characters so that they were, like, interesting, complex characters.
No, I totally agree. I think in terms of elevation, this is kind of off the charts.
Yeah, absolutely.
So good. I loved all the little quirks. I feel like this is just such a good example of when you take, like, Wes Anderson's, like, quirkiness and give it to a story that, like, really warrants it. Like, sometimes I think Wes Anderson just, like, forces it a little bit much and it's, like, uncomfortable. But, like, this was such a good place to put it because it was already quirky and, like, weird and, like, a strange story to begin with. And so, like, having a strange director direct it in this way is, like, so good. And all the weird animal stuff. And, like, I could cuss right now, cuss you or something. So good. Oh, and all the visuals and the fact that it was is that technically claymation or is that something else?
It's not stop claymation. Motion. It was clay, but, like stop animation. I don't know. I'm not actually sure if that was computer generated or if that was, like, you know, physically done, but it looks like stop animation.
Yeah. And just, like, very, very, very good. Now, where to put it in our list?
Where to put it?
I would put it between Pride and Prejudice and Princess Diaries.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I could almost see it above Pride and Prejudice, but I'm okay putting it below Pride and Prejudice because it's extremely close for me.
Okay. Cool.
Okay.
All right, I think this is going to be one that I have to argue for.
We're getting into that.
We're getting into the bottom five on my list. Mm-hmm. So, Shutter Island.
I don't have that on my list. Pitch.
Okay. Okay. So, Shutter Island is hard because I think we were just so taken aback by it. It was just so much better than I expected it to be. Mm. And I think I kind of am conflating it with the book too, because I'd never read the book. I'd seen the movie a couple times, but just they're both so good and so nuanced in their approach to the mystery of it all, right? There's so many different mysteries and side mysteries, and just, I think we're both just so pleasantly surprised by it, mm-hmm. that it was as good as it was. And I think Leonardo DiCaprio does a really, really great job. I could be biased because he's part of my heart, but he does such a good job. And Mark Ruffalo does a great job. Mm-hmm. And just the tone of the whole thing is very good. I think they do, it's so hard because you forget specifics, but I do think they fumbled a few aspects, which is why it's in my bottom five and not my top five of the book, because I think the book is undoubtedly better. But yeah. I just think in terms of quality of work, I think it deserves to be on this list.
Okay, so here are my sort of reasons that it's not on this list, because I agree, super enjoyable book to read and movie to watch. But I feel like, okay, so I guess basically the top two reasons that it didn't make my list for the movie is, one, that I feel like the mystery and the sort of plot twist aspect of it was not pulled off as well as it was in the book. I feel like there were details in the book that were necessary to make it as effective of a twist that weren't portrayed in the movie. And I went into the movie knowing the reveal. So I was paying attention to that more. Whereas the first time I watched that movie, I was just oh, holy shit. he's been making it up the whole time. They've been playing mm-hmm. along, whatever. Whereas when I was watching it with a more discerning eye, because I knew the twist was happening, there were some things where I was well, it wasn't as effective. And I also feel in both of them, but more so in the movie, this is just my impression, and this could be based on, false memories, but that the portrayal of the mentally ill was more, uncomfortable and problematic in the movie.
I don't know. I think that was a problem with both the book and the movie. I remember feeling acutely uncomfortable.
But I feel like the movie was worse.
I don't know about that point, but I will see the other point that you made on the reveal was not as strong. I think that is valid. I would be comfortable putting this at the bottom of our list right now.
Okay, we can put this. Yes, let's do that then. Okay, next I'm gonna say Wild.
That's not on my list. Sell me on it.
Okay, Wild is just. It's a really good movie, okay? Part of it is so first of all, it's based on a memoir, so it's hard to refer to her as a character, but I'm going to.
Okay.
The character of Cheryl Strayed is interesting and nuanced. Her writing was so good, and we got some of that reflected in the movie. It's, about, I personally find it hard to get into narratives that are, just about a single person who's alone and their thoughts, right? I'm generally this isn't interesting enough for me. I don't care what you're, reflecting on. But she drew me in so well. Again, her writing and her background and the way that she was dealing with her grief and all of the mistakes she had made was so interesting. Reese Witherspoon did an incredible job of portraying that character. There were just, these, it was a movie that had such, visceral reactions from me, right? The moment, sort of, referenced probably moment where she drops one of her hiking shoes down a mountain and then just is, shocked and then in fucking immediate anger just chucks the other shoe down the mountain. Like, that's incredible. Like, the emotional response, and then also, like, the moment when she's, like, there are these, like, hunters who show up, the two men who show up, and there's, like, this tension. Like, it was just so good at eliciting these emotional reactions. The end when the little boy sings the song and I cried, like, it's just so good at, like, taking this, you know, basically it's like, yes, sad woman walks a really long trail. That's the basis of that story, but it's so well told and portrayed that it becomes this incredible narrative.
Interesting, because I agree with you, but more about the book than the movie, where, like, I had visceral reactions to all of those things in the book, like, for sure. But, like, I hardly remember the movie. I remember some scenes, but it didn't make, like, a big mark on me. Like I remember, like, so many things about the book, like the freaking horse being put down. Like, god damn, that was a lot. And, like, I remember that, and I remember the, you know, just, like, how painful her feet sounded, and, like, you know, Snapple, and, like, all of this stuff. Like, I remember that so vividly from the book, but I cannot for the life of me remember the movie beyond a handful of scenes. So, like, that's why it didn't make a huge impression on me as a movie. Like, the book, for sure, has lasted with me a lot longer. But the movie itself, I thought it was a pretty straight up adaptation, which is better than a lot of other adaptations, but I thought it lacked the power of the book. Like, it didn't elevate it, is in my opinion.
Okay, interesting. I guess I agree that I don't think it elevated it, but I think it captured it extremely well. Like, I feel like I felt, I mean, besides obviously those small details that are just, like, you can't portray the same way in a movie as you can in the book, I felt like those emotional beats were hit with the same intensity in the movie for me. So if we're putting this on our list right now, I mean, do you feel like it would be at the bottom, or do you see an argument for any higher than that?
I could see between Stardust and Shutter Island.
Okay. I definitely think there. I think maybe even, well, I don't know. There's such different stories. I could maybe even put it above Stardust, but there's such different stories. It's so hard to compare.
It is very hard.
So yes, I'm okay with putting it above Shutter Island. Okay. I could deal with it.
Okay. My next one, my number 7, is Brooklyn.
I don't have this one.
Oh my gosh, really? I thought for sure you would.
I don't know. It's like we're getting into the weeds where it's so hard. Because, like, I really did enjoy Brooklyn, the book and the movie. But it was just in thinking about, like, I don't know, because part of this was based on, like, just if you, like, if someone asked me, like, hey, which of these movies do you want to watch again right now? These are the ones I would have chosen, you know?
Oh, interesting.
Because, like, Brooklyn, even though it was really good and I did enjoy it, it's just, like, there were other movies that edged it out in terms of, like, just my own personal tastes and stuff.
Interesting. Well, I'll try to sell you on Brooklyn. Okay. So I just think it did a really good job of, it's such a, for lack of a better term, like, quiet story. It's such a, it's not, like, big and adventurous. There's no, like, crazy thing that happens to her. It's just, like, you know, I mean, the crazy thing is moving to an entirely different country across the Atlantic. Like, that's crazy. But, like, the rest of it is just, like, she's trying to, like, make a living. She meets, like, a very kind of normal, sweet boy, and they start to make a life, and then she goes back to Ireland, and she meets this rich boy from her hometown, and then she realizes how terrible it actually is in her hometown, and she goes back to her sweet boy. And I just thought it did such a good job, and, like, the casting is, like, impeccable. Like, Saoirse, is that how you say her name?
Ronan.
Saoirse Ronan, and whoever plays the boy, the very sweet Italian boy, I can't even remember his name, but, like, he did such a good job, and, like, their chemistry was, like, off the charts. And just, like, very cute, and I love myself, like, a little, like, period piece. I don't know if it counts as period piece, if it's, like, 50s or what, 40s or something. I don't know. Early 19th century. We'll say 19th century. Thank you, 20th century. Listen, I'm a little tipsy. Yep. And so I just thought it was, like, I think it captured the tone and the atmosphere of the book very, very well. Where, it, like, it translated to film very smoothly. And, yeah, I just think it did a really good job.
I think you're right. And I also think it's like, okay, and maybe this is just me like overgeneralizing about you, but I feel like it's notable because even though you like this story, I feel like you very much more veer towards, you're more attracted to like fantastical stories, you know?
Yes.
So the fact that this like, I mean like, which it wasn't just like, there were elements that made it more of a unique story, but the fact that this just like sort of day-to-day life story interested you so much, I think is like powerful because like I am generally into these types of stories and I feel like you're less into them.
No, that is very true. And like it helps that there's a romance. Like I'm always a sucker for romance. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like the whole thing, right? It wasn't the whole thing. It was mostly,
yeah,
you know, how your identity is impacted by where you're currently living. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting. So, yeah.
Okay. Where does this belong on our list?
It's so funny because I'm even contradicting my own ratings, but
that's okay. That's good. Like, okay. That's like,
I think
we're
it belongs
each other of stuff
between Wild and Shutter Island.
Yeah. Okay. I agree with that.
Okay. Cool.
Okay. Hello, lovely listeners. I am Jenna, and I'm recording this bit in an extremely small window of free time that I have 3 days after this episode was supposed to air. So that should give you a little bit of information about what my life is like right now. But anyway, Felix, you can't, no, you gotta go away. Get out from under my desk. No. I'm recording something, Felix. You're ruining it. Okay, well now the dog is lying under my desk. Anyway, I am here to talk to you about Podcoin. Podcoin is a free podcast listening app available for iPhone and Android, which lets you listen to the podcast that you're already listening to. And as you do, you accrue a virtual currency called Podcoin, which you can then exchange for gift cards or charitable donations. So it's a cool app, lets you listen to podcasts and get rewarded in the process. If you download the app, you can use the code ABITMUCH, all one word, and that will get you 300 Podcoin just for signing up. So check it out. It's really cool. Thank you for listening. And now back to your regularly scheduled broadcast. So I'm going to bring to the table The Martian.
Okay, I do not have that on my list. Sell me on The Martian.
So I feel like we can both agree that The Martian was a very enjoyable movie to watch. In fact, yes. I know that we both agree on that because we saw it in theaters and we agreed on that afterwards.
Good times.
But I also feel like it was a really good adaptation.
Okay.
Like, I liked it just as a movie because I liked it when we saw it in theaters before I had ever read the book. And then when we read the book, I really enjoyed that too. But I feel like the movie did a great job of keeping the tone, keeping sort of the main aspects of it, and also cutting away enough of, because like, I mean, I personally, like, I enjoyed reading about like the weird specific like technical problems that Mark Watney had to deal with in order to survive on Mars. But I feel like the movie did a great job of keeping enough of that in while still like cutting out the details. Like, it just, it was such a good, like, I guess in terms of what we've been talking about so far, it didn't particularly elevate the story, but it was almost like a perfect adaptation in terms of just taking this story that's in text and turning it into the movie. And it also had a lot of really well-known actors who did a very good job.
I agree with those points. I probably, the only reason it didn't make it on my list is because it wasn't entirely impactful, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and we talked about this too when we saw it in theaters, is like the whole conceit of it is like, you know, the whole world doesn't give up on one man, which is like inspiring, but it's like, I don't know what, it's still hard for me to articulate what falls flat in The Martian. where it's like there's just one emotional cord that's missing and I cannot find it anywhere. But it's like, where it's just like, yeah, that was a movie. It was like, that was a good movie. I was entertained. But it's like, yes. My life has not been changed or altered in any way. I have not, my way of thinking about the world has not been challenged. My, yeah. Like, my emotions have not been strung out. Like, it's just like, you know, it's a cool movie. There's some science. There's, you know, but you're never really like that afraid that he's going to die. And you never really think that people are going to give up on him. And the whole thing is like very, you know, patriotic and forward thinking, and everything turns out okay. And it's just kind of like, okay, but how has this changed the world? It hasn't. Like, I don't know. It's in like in Mark Watney. I don't even remember the guy's name.
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon. It's not Mark Watney?
No, Matt Damon is the actor who played Mark Watney.
Oh my gosh, I did remember his name.
Yeah,
wow.
You remember the character's name, yes.
Okay, well, Mark Watney. It's like he doesn't really change, right? It's not really a character journey. It's just the same character survives on the planet. He's not changed by this experience, which is wild to me because he's like in isolation for years and years. Like, I think that's probably the note that's missing, is that he seems unchanged by the end of it. And that feels very disingenuous to me. But that's like a story problem in general. It's not a movie problem. So, I don't know.
Okay. You're right, though. That's an excellent point, that there isn't a huge... I mean, not that there's not... Like, he definitely has moments of reflection.
Yeah.
Again, probably more so in the book, but also the movie. But I think that's actually a really excellent point about the lack of overall character change. Because, like, my sort of next point was going to be that, like, I'm more... Like, in both the book and the movie, I'm more interested in his story than the story going on in Earth, right? Like, I'm more interested in how he is being resourceful to survive on Mars than how, like, the rest of the world is dealing with him being stranded on Mars. And, like, in that way, it's almost sort of similar to Wild, right? In that, like, I'm interested in how this individual is surviving under really difficult circumstances. But you make an excellent point that there isn't a lot of character change. So I'm totally willing to put this below Wild in our list. And maybe even if we're measuring it on the same metric, below Brooklyn, because Brooklyn definitely showed that same kind of character change, whereas The Martian didn't.
I agree between Brooklyn and Shutter Island.
Yes. Yeah. That's what I'm. Yes. Cool. I agree. Okay, your turn.
All right, I have The Devil Wears Prada.
I don't have that one.
Okay, so my argument for this one is that, like, the book was okay. It was an okay book. It was, like, a revenge book for, like, a girl who had worked for, what's-her-face, Anna Wintour or something.
Yes. Yeah, that's the real person's name.
Yeah, basically. It was a real-life girl using fiction to bitch about her shitty job.
Yeah.
Like, it was an okay book. It's an excellent movie, in my opinion. I enjoy it immensely. It's got Meryl Streep. It's got Anne Hathaway. She's our second appearance on this list. And I just, like, really enjoy it every time I watch it. All of the fashion, the whole, you know, monologue about the cobalt blue sweater that Anne Hathaway is wearing from Meryl Streep. Like, iconic things. And just, like, the whole vibe is so, like, early 2000s. And it's just so good. And it's just, like, a very good little time capsule movie for me, personally. And just, like... I think it does have, it's like problematic, right? Because it's like, then we could go totally into, you know, how she has a shitty boyfriend who doesn't support her, like, all of this. But, like, I thought it just did a really great job of taking a mediocre book and turning it into, like, a pretty good movie.
You are, yes, I agree that in terms of elevation of the source material, it did a really good job. It obviously had, like, an incredible cast with Anne Hathaway, Meryl Streep, Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
What's-her-face, who's married to John Krasinski. I feel really bad that I don't remember her name because
I want to say Emily Bloom. Is that right?
Emily Blunt.
Blunt. So close.
Like, yes, excellent cast. I feel like it's a good movie. I feel like you are more excited about this movie than I am, but I agree in terms of elevation. It was really, really good. So where does that put it on our list?
Where do you want to put it? I would put it, I think I'm okay putting it at the end of the list.
You think at the end?
Yeah. I think it's not as good of a, it's like a better adaptation, but it's not as good of a movie as Shutter Island, in my opinion.
Okay. I can agree with that. My next movie is one that we're just never, ever going to agree on. And it's Mrs. Dalloway.
Oh, Jenna.
I know. Right. I put this on my list. I knew it was going to be important for me and not important for you because I just can't make you love Mrs. Dalloway the way that I love Mrs. Dalloway.
All right. Try to sell me on Mrs. Dalloway.
Okay. So the story Mrs. Dalloway in general is such an excellent portrayal. It's such an excellent, like, it does such a good job of, again, taking this, like, quotidian thing, right? In the morning, Clarissa Dalloway, she's preparing for the party. By the end of the day and by the end of the story, she has the party. But in the process of that, we get her whole life. We get her complicated relationships with Peter, who has just returned from India, and with her friend, whose name I forget, who's played by Lena Headey, and how they were maybe kind of bisexual, and all of her regrets throughout her life. We get the effect of, like, wartime on the people who were involved. Poor Septimus, who was, like, in the trenches and now is dealing with PTSD before the world knew what PTSD was. And it's just, like, does such a great job of, again, taking this, like, a single day in London, a nothing story, right? And then inserting so much drama, so many complicated interpersonal conflicts, and, like, expanding that to this dread that the Lost Generation has because of the state of the world in the aftermath of World War I, and it's just so good.
My counter argument is that it's boring. That's all I got. But that's an opinion. Like, I can recognize that it's probably, like, a very good piece of literature, a very important good piece of literature. I remember very little about the movie. I remember Lena Headey, because of the gay stuff, of course. But I don't remember a whole lot about that movie. I remember snippets of the book because I had to read it, like, I read half of it twice. But, and, like, it's just so hard because it's just such a difference of opinion. Like, I understand that, like, it's not a bad book because I'm not entertained by it. I recognize it's a good book. And I recognize it's a good story. And all of your points are very valid. But I just didn't have a good time. Megan Bird personally did not have a good time reading that book or watching that movie.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to objectively look at it in that way.
I knew going into this that was going to be the case because <Yeah. laughs> it's just our different interests. And I guess I feel like the movie was a very good adaptation. Again, like, similar to The Martian, basically. It was a really good adaptation. It didn't add anything new, but it did an excellent job of turning that same story into a movie.
Okay.
So
Where would you put it on the list?
I feel like I want to put it in the area, which this is trying to distance my own personal appreciation for it and think of it more objectively. I think I would put it in the area of, like, Stardust Wild Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm trying to set aside my own subjective opinions. Okay, I'm trying to think of what I can live with. Mm-hmm. I would be comfortable between Stardust and Wild. We're going objective adaptation / good movie realm. I'm cool with that.
Okay. I think that's a compromise we can both agree on. what is your final suggestion?
Yeah.
Go for it.
So it's fitting because you're also gonna hate this one.
I think I know what it is, yeah.
It's Beautiful Creatures.
We can't put Beautiful Creatures on this top 10 list. It's not a good movie. I agree that it made some changes from the also not very good book that were effective. But it's still, I mean, if we put it on this list, if you just watch that movie compared to all the rest of this movie, it's definitely the worst movie.
I think you're right. But I think it deserves an honorable mention because it took one of the shittiest books I've ever read, and it turned it into a passable movie. It turned it into a movie that made some sort of sense, that was still enjoyable to watch. It was still trash, but it was, like, fun trash. And, like, it changed the story in subtle, fundamental ways that made it palatable. And I thought the images were very nice. I mean, it's definitely a product of this YA craze, right? Of like, let's just make every YA book mm-hmm. into a movie. So it's a victim of that. But the fact that it like creates a full story arc out of a book that was not a full story arc is just very impressive to me. It was the very first movie adaptation of a book that I've ever watched that I went, that's better than the book, which is an impressive feat to me because, you know, like a lot of these on our top 10 are different than the book, but I wouldn't necessarily say they're better than the book, but this movie is unquestionably better than the book. And that's an accomplishment that deserves to be recognized in my eyes.
Okay. Well, I agree that it took pretty much just trash that wasn't that enjoyable to read and made it into more entertaining trash, but it still has to go in our bottom slot.
I'm fine with that. I just wanted you to hear me out on that okay. one. Because it's like, it's not a short trash book either. It's no. a fucking long trash book. Like, I've had to read that book twice now. I've wasted countless hours of my life on this book. And that movie, the experience of watching it, just made it a little bit better. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. My final suggestion, which again, just for reasons of personal preference, I don't think I'm going to be able to convince you on, is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Okay. Interesting. Try to sell me on the movie, because I'm sold on the book. Love the book, but sell me on the movie.
So I feel like, again, this was a very solid, strong adaptation in terms of taking the important aspects of the book and translating them to film. It had, like, first of all, a great cast. Alan Rickman as that depressed robot, like, incredible. And, what's his face? As Arthur Dent. What's the name of that actor?
Oh, God.
Who is that actor?
I don't know.
Okay, it doesn't matter. But anyway, good cast, right? Zooey Deschanel playing that, like, space manic pixie dream girl. Excellent.
Yes, excellent.
You know, who had her own depth but was viewed through that lens by Arthur Dent. Just, like, good cast, good adaptation. The visuals, I felt like, fit the movie so well. Like, they did such a great job of integrating the humor as well. You know, like, because we have, like, these wild, insane things that happen in the book. Like, when they're, it's like, you know, they get, like, beamed up into the spaceship, and then the spaceship has to, like, resume normalcy, right? Because the whole concept of the spaceship is that it is based on, like, improbability, and so it has to, like, get back to the most probable reality. And so, like, I felt like they did that so well. Like, we get to see them in the movie, like, as armchairs, right? Because as the, like, probability engine is, like, getting back to normal. And, like, mm-hmm. so I felt like it really incorporated, like, the humor that is so important to the story. And the acting was very good. The casting was very good. It did a pretty good job of, like, condensing the story into a movie, it kept the narration, and this is a story where narration works. And I just really love that movie. It opens with the musical number where all of the dolphins are leaving Earth and they're singing So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. And I love that. And I know that you don't love that as much as me, but it's so absurd but so well pulled off.
I find it so interesting because it's so funny to me because, you know, our fundamental difference in opinion is like, you like, I mean, you know, this is overgeneralization, obviously, but like, you like everyday, like, classical literature, and I like fantastical adventure, crazy things are happening. But, like, there's a threshold that you go where it's, like, so ridiculous that, like, you love it more than I do. I don't know how that works, but it's for sure how we operate, and it cracks me up every time. But, no, I agree. Like, very good. I just think when it comes to adaptations, it's really, really, really hard. And maybe that's a credit to the movies. It's very hard to adapt something like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy because it's so out there, because it's so fantastical, because, you know, any kind of like, anytime you have a written down, like a literary form of like alien life, mm-hmm. and these crazy, like almost unimaginable life forms and civilizations and stuff, and when you bring that onto a screen, it just falls flat to me, like inevitably. So like, I think that movie did do a good job of it, but I just think it could just never measure up. Like, it could never elevate that story. Mm-hmm. Like, that is a story that will always and forever be, or maybe not always and forever, you know, technology's insane, but like, for at least now, will forever like be, I keep saying forever and I don't mean forever. Right now is a better representation when it's written down and in your mind than when you're looking at it. I think it loses its power when you're looking at it. And it's like more silly than anything else. Which, like, I mean, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is undoubtedly silly. So, yeah. I mean, that helps things. But it's just like, even like the big, you know, IA thing that's like, what's the answer to the universe? It's like 42. Like, it just didn't land as well, you know? So that's my only problem with Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the movie.
Okay, I guess I agree that, yes, obviously there were details and aspects of the books that are better, and part of that is because they can exist in your mind instead of having to be, you know, sort of forced on you visually.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, I don't know, it was just, I just really liked that movie, and I still think it's a really good adaptation. But, like, where do you envision this on our list?
I envision this, you're not going to like it, but I envision it between The Devil Wears Prada and Beautiful Creatures. Where do you envision this on our list?
Okay, let me think about this. I think it's a better story than The Martian, so I'd want to put it between Brooklyn and The Martian.
Whew. Maybe we just break even and put it between The Martian and Shutter Island.
Okay, fine. I know we're never
going to like, I'm not happy, you're not happy, it must mean we're doing something right.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so we've each presented everything on our list.
Yes.
Right now, here are the standings for the top 10.
Okay.
Princess Bride, Brokeback Mountain, Pride and Prejudice, Fantastic Mr. Fox, The Princess Diaries, Coraline, Stardust, Mrs. Dalloway, Wild, Brooklyn.
I am comfortable with that.
You're comfortable with that? Okay. Yeah. Let me look at this list. Let me think about this. Because these are the things that we are cutting would be The Martian, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Shutter Island, Devil Wears Prada, and Beautiful Creatures.
Yeah, no, I think I'm happy with that list, actually. Is there anything you want to argue?
No, you know, I think I agree. I think terms, and I don't know, we could, like, definitely go back and forth more on, like, the order of them. And part of that is always going to be just personal preference. But I feel like you're right, like, cutting those bottom five, I agree that, like, that top 10 is really solid. That probably is, like, the best top movies that we've watched.
Yeah. Do we want to have honorable mentions of the worst movies we ever watched.
Okay. Okay. So I'm just gonna say the top 10 again. So
okay. Get, like, okay. Okay.
Okay. So number one. No, I should do it from the bottom, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
Number 10, Brooklyn. Number 9, Wild. Number 8, Mrs. Dalloway. Number 7, Stardust. Number 6, Coraline. Number 5, The Princess Diaries. Number 4, Fantastic Mr. Fox. Number 3, Pride and Prejudice. Number 2, Brokeback Mountain. And number 1, as Megan predicted at the beginning of this episode, is our very first movie we ever did for this podcast, The Princess Bride. So honestly, we should have stopped while we were on top. We just hit it out of the park from the very first episode.
We did. So it's just been downhill from there.
Yeah, exactly. I think we as podcasters have gotten better since then.
I mean, I would hope so.
Yes. Okay, so you want to just real quick go through the worst movies?
Mm-hmm. In no particular order, because I'm pretty sure we agreed, I mean, almost to the T.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I'll just read them out. Maze Runner. Mm-hmm. Awful. The Giver. Not the worst, but still pretty bad. Aragon. Just
the probably the worst one.
Heart-crushingly disappointing. From, like, where you started to where you ended up, like, source material to movie, crushing. Yes. Divergent.
Yep.
I mean, it's kind of, you kind of knew what it was going to be from the book. And, like,
but it,
and
made then, it still made it worse.
It still made it worse. Yeah, no, that's for sure. Beowulf.
Yes. Wild.
Absurd. I cannot get the Why? Image of Angelina Jolie and her creepy-ass braid out of my head. Maximum Ride.
I agreed, yes.
That was just shitty all around. And, like, lest we not forget that this was the week that I read the wrong book. I had to read the entirety of Maximum Ride in, like, 5 hours, watch the movie right afterward. It was, like, it was the weirdest day I've ever had in my entire life. The Choice.
Yep.
Just all around really bad. I can barely remember it besides, like, Coma Wife. It was bad.
Yeah.
The Lightning Thief.
Yes.
Just
so, oh. So disappointing. So
just
bad.
Kidding. That's worse than Aragon, where source
that's,
material.
You're right. That's worse than Aragon, because even though I like Aragon the book, The Lightning Thief is a better book. It was an excellent book that was turned into a terrible movie.
Whew.
Such a tragedy.
Yeah. Worst memoir, Brain on Fire.
You're right. You've just named to the T my bottom 10. So
yeah. Yikes. And also on my bottom, it's like Beautiful Creatures is also on my bottom
10. Yes. Yep.
So there we go, folks. It's been an interesting ride for sure. Some really good stuff, some really bad stuff. It's always tricky to adapt literature to film. Some do it better than others. For damn sure. If the source material sucks, the movie's gonna suck. That's what we've learned. Yeah. You can't really take a sucky book and make a great movie. Like, Beautiful Creatures, sucky book, okay movie, but you can't take a sucky book and make a great movie. At least we haven't seen it so far.
Right. I feel like the most, potentially the best example of that would be Devil Wears Prada, where the book was, I mean, it wasn't, like, terrible, but it wasn't really a good book. Like, I wouldn't reread it. But the movie was, you know, very close to being on our top 10.
I have a question for you. Of our top 10, do you think that any of these movies are more enjoyable than the book?
Fantastic Mr. Fox is. So that's just unquestionable.
I agree. I think The Princess Diaries is. But, you like, you, when we've talked about this, you like the book better than I do.
I like the book better than you do. That's been established, yeah. Yeah, I think there are other ones where Coraline probably too, even though the book was pretty substantial. I enjoyed the movie better than I did the book.
I hesitate on that one just because, like, I think Neil Gaiman's imagery is hard to capture in, like, actual visuals. I think he's just very good at eliciting emotions.
Yeah, yeah.
So I hesitate on Coraline.
But yeah, I don't think any of the rest of them are. Brokeback Mountain is close because Brokeback Mountain is very good. But just like, you know, because even though it was a short story, it was still able to have some nuance and have some detail that was like
Right? And it really somehow feels more genuine than the movie. Like, the movie is very good, but it also feels like a little Oscar baity to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I so, can see that.
Yeah. All right, I think we might be done.
All right, great. Thank you so much for listening to A Bit Much.
We'd like to thank Bree Mimba and Meredith Stein for our lovely logo.
You can find us on the internet. Our Twitter is at A Bit Much Podcast. Our blog is abitmuchpodcast.blogspot.com. And our email is abitmuchpodcast@gmail.com.
You can use any of those places to let us know any books/movies you want us to read/watch/drink/talk about.
We will probably be late on our next episode. Things are uncertain. The future is always uncertain. But Megan is uncertain about being busy in her life for the next several weeks.
Listen, so, I got the federal government coming. It's a thing.
So we may have to push off the next episode a little bit, and we haven't decided what it's going to be about anyway.
So stay tuned? Question mark.
Yes. Life is always unpredictable. You know, we'll try to put something out eventually. Oh. So I think now what we say is thank you again for listening.
I think so.
I'm Jenna.
And I am, as always, Megan.
And it's just, I can't believe it's been 2 years. It's been so much fun to make this. I can't believe I wasted so much time on reading dumb books, but also clearly seeing some pretty good movies and books.
Yeah.
So it's been fun. Thank you for putting up with us. Until next time, read responsibly.